She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties.
When Aunt Em came to live there, as in Kansas, she was a young, pretty wife. The sun and wind had changed her too. They had taken the sparkle from her eyes and left them a sober grey, and they had taken the red from her cheeks and lips, and they were grey also. She was thin and gaunt and never smiled now.
With our friend who is back with us, Hazel Gaynor!
Hazel Gaynor!
Thank you for coming back, Hazel.
Thank you for having me back.
Besties, she was with us last December for Christmas with the Queen and yeah. Our friend Heather Webb. And now she's back with us for Before Dorothy, her new novel that's coming out next month. Oh my God.
Thank you for the arcs, Hazel.
Yes.
We appreciate it.
Oh, they're precious, aren't they? Yeah, paper arcs are beautiful. Like a dying breed. So it's really great to get your hands on one.
Yeah, we've been looking to get paper arcs. We've gotten a few e-arcs. We get audiobook arcs as mm-hmm. well, since we tend to read both physical and audio. But we still look. I put all of my arcs over here.
Here's all my arcs. And I'm the same. And I think, you know, there's just something lovely about a physical book. I'm a real physical book girl. And I just, there's something really special, I think, with an advanced copy that you can physically hold it and see it before anyone else, you know?
Yeah. So. Well, and I feel like people don't realize how special that is, because things like NetGalley now, everybody has access to it. But like, I'm a librarian and the world of publishing has changed a lot since ebooks, but in terms of like advanced reader copies, but it used to be a very, very big deal to be on an ARC list, to be on a galley list.
Yeah. When I used to go like yard sailing with my grandma, I would look for them because we lived in upstate New York, and there was a lot of vacation homes for the city up there. So I always got to find random ARCs.
Yeah. I'm always really like, we get as an author, and this is a side of the career that I had never even considered. Of course, you get sent lots of advanced copies of books to read and offer endorsements, and still, you know, I always think how lucky I am, because there's people, and you can see people on social media desperate to get their hands on a book that's coming out, and one just lands in your door, you know?
Yeah.
And it is a really, you're right, you know, it's a really great thing to have an early read of something that you're looking forward to. Well, so
we like it too, because we get to, you know, share it on the podcast, and we get to hang out with authors like you. And I mean, we love that.
We love it.
And we're so happy to have you back again. That episode that we did in December with your writing partner, Heather Webb, was just so fun. And it's just awesome.
It was great.
To see you
we
again.
Had such fun. And it's nice to know I didn't disgrace myself and I've been invited back solo, you know. So that's always good.
Of course not.
Of course. So I would love to start with your bio. And then how about you do the synopsis for us, love?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, okay. Hazel Gaynor is an award-winning New York Times, USA Today, and international best-selling author known for
her
deeply moving historical novels, which explore the defining events of the 2000th century. Why am I terrible at speaking? Who knows? Shortlisted for multiple awards in the U.S., U.K., and Ireland. Her most recent novel, The Last Lifeboat, was a Times of London Historical Novel of the Month, shortlisted for the 2023 Irish Book Award, and won the 2024 Audi Award for Best Fiction. Heck yeah. Hazel's co-written novels with Heather Webb have also all been published to critical acclaims and shortlisted for several international awards. Hazel's work has been translated into 20 languages, hot damn woman, and is published in 27 territories to date. She lives in Ireland with her family. Before Dorothy is her 12th novel.
12th.
I mean, she's been a busy lady. Busy
is
lady.
Is that 12 solo or is that 12 including with Heather?
No, that's 12 including with Heather. Yeah.
Amazing. What a career.
It has to still be amazing every time the new book comes in the mail for the first time and you see everything you've been working on, just
and look at that cover in this. That is gorgeous. This.
Like that
the
is cover,
they did such a great job, and I love
this font.
I'm so pleased you said that, because this is a little nod to the title card of the Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
And we were so excited when that was picked up on in the first Wicked movie. That obviously the Wicked has its own typeface, but when the movie begins after the first opening scene and the Wicked, and it's the same typeface as the Wizard of Oz, and there's a little nod to that in US edition of Before Dorothy. So
we'll get into that with our questions, but there's a lot of lovely nods to the Wizard of Oz in here.
You can tell I'm a fan. Yeah. You want me to read the synopsis? Yeah.
Please, my love.
Let's do it. Long before Dorothy visits Oz, her aunt Emily Gale sets off on her own unforgettable adventure. Chicago, 1924. Emily and her new husband Henry yearn to leave the bustle of Chicago for the promise of their own American dream among the harsh beauty of the prairie. Mm-hmm. But leaving the city means leaving Emily's beloved sister Annie, who was once closer to her than anyone in the world. Mm. Kansas, 1932. Emily and Henry have established their new home among the warmth of the farming community in Kansas. Aligned with the fickle fortunes of nature, their lives hold a precarious and hopeful purpose until tragedy strikes and their orphaned niece Dorothy lands on their doorstep. The wide-eyed child isn't the only thing to disrupt Emily's world. Drought and devastating dust storms threaten to destroy everything, and her much-loved home becomes a place of uncertainty and danger. When the past catches up with the present and old secrets are exposed, Emily fears she will lose the most cherished thing of all, Dorothy. Bursting with courage and heart, Before Dorothy tells the story of the woman who raised a beloved heroine and ponders the question, what is the true meaning of home?
I love it. Yes. So besties, reminder, this is a new release. We are not doing spoilers today. Usually in a book, besties,
this book isn't even out yet.
Yeah. So fuck you guys. This is ours. I'm just kidding.
We're very early. It's good.
We're very early. It's beautiful though. So you guys are getting a sneak peek with us. Before Dorothy, we meet Emily Gale as she is about to become the legal guardian of her niece, Dorothy. Mm-hmm. We all know Dorothy.
Yeah.
And we all know her story. So why tell Emily's story? What about Aunt Em called to you?
Mm. Well, you know, where does a story begin is always a fascinating question. And I actually had an inkling and an idea to write a Wizard of Oz reimagining way back in 2009. Mm-hmm. So we're a long time away from that. That was a contemporary sort of reimagining. Yeah. And I didn't really go far with that. I put it to one side, started to write historical fiction. And it was when I was thinking about possible ideas for this 12th book. And I have always been interested in an origin story of a well-known character in a well-known book, but I've never found the right story. And I was looking on my bookshelves for inspiration, picked up a copy of Gregory Maguire's Wicked and put it back down again because I thought, well, hell, he's already done it, you know?
Yeah.
So there's nothing left to say. Right. I went for a walk and no word of a lie, the name Auntie M popped into my head. And I was like, Auntie M, who is she? Yeah. So I kind of was obviously, as we all do, I think, we imagine Auntie M from the original movie, the 1939 movie, black and white. She's quite a stern, brusque woman. Yeah. Not particularly likable, older. Sort of annoyed with Dorothy at the beginning. Yeah. And that's the vision I think we all have of Auntie M. But I went back to the original book, L. Frank Baum's The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. And there's a line in here, and I'm going to read you a tiny line from this book because this is why I wanted to tell Auntie M's story. And in the opening chapter, it says, when Aunt Em came to live there, as in Kansas, she was a young, pretty wife. The sun and wind had changed her too. They had taken the sparkle from her eyes and left them a sober grey, and they had taken the red from her cheeks and lips, and they were grey also. She was thin and gaunt and never smiled now. And I was like, what the hell's gone on here? You know, why? Right. What has changed her?
Something happened.
Something broke this woman.
Yeah, absolutely. So
That's beautiful.
From the movie and this sort of finished version of this elderly lady. And there's no mention of age in the book. So that was just MGM's decision to make her that way. So I saw her very differently. I saw a very young woman who obviously had moved to the prairie from somewhere else. And her whole life had changed. So there was a life that had happened before that. And then the other question, obviously, that were never answered in the movie or in the book even, is why is Dorothy living with Auntie M and Uncle Henry? Where are her parents? And what relationship is she to them? So there's loads of gaps in this incredibly well-known story. And for me as a novelist, that's like gold. I was like, wow, there is a fascinating story to tell here. And that was my in.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting, because a lot of times when we get these retellings and you think about, you know, the book Wicked, it's a retelling that tells the main character story, like the character that we know. And what you've done here is taken a character that we didn't have a story for, that we get. I mean, if you've only read the movie and haven't read the book, she's maybe in, what, 30 minutes of the whole film?
Yeah.
We don't know her story.
I think it's like less than 10 minutes. It's gotta be.
And, the same, and it's something that I've always wondered, like, I've always wondered why is she living with.
Yeah. It's like, it's Star Wars, right? Why is he living with Uncle Ben? Right.
Yeah.
Is he living with Uncle Ben? Absolutely.
We didn't just become a yak farmer in the desert out of nowhere.
Yeah. Right. Right. And I really think those, you know, why do we want to read a reimagining or an origin story? And there is that, there's the draw of the nostalgia and the love of something, whether it's Star Wars, whether it's Little House on the Prairie, Little Women, Wizard of Oz. There's a nostalgia to something familiar, but there's that extra sort of, because they were maybe a side character, or we haven't ever considered why is the Witch of the West wicked. You know, this extra sort of intrigue as readers, as consumers, if you like, that we want to understand that. And I just thought this was fascinating, because I've clearly always loved The Wizard of Oz. I've just adored this world since I was a kid. As I say, I'd thought about maybe a reimagining years and years ago. But this felt really true to my skills as a writer, because I write historical fiction. I love writing stories with big landscape, and where better than the prairie? And this all seemed to fit. And I think you've got to be really careful about stepping into such a beloved world of anything that you might not be the right person to do it, you know? And I think maybe several years ago, I don't know what to do with that. I'm just going to leave it. So I think it was interesting that it came back to me after all these years of writing historical pieces, and I felt able to tackle it. And I just had such kind of passion and such joy.
Yeah. Right place, right time.
World.
It comes out on the page too. And the thing is that if people are they're not the same at all, since Wicked is about, the Wicked Witch, and this is about Auntie M. But if people are saying, oh, well, this is just another retelling, which it isn't.
It's not.
The tone is completely different between the two novels. I mean, completely different. I read Wicked when it first came out, before it was a Broadway show. And when adopting it into a Broadway show, I was like, how the fuck are they going to do this?
I was like, what?
That is not going to be a good show.
I was like, time out. Why are there's assault, like real assault, right?
There's a whole chapter that describes her shades of green. I'm like, what are you doing with that?
No, and that's a really good point. And I think, you know, I was very clear with my publisher at the beginning, you know, this is a story. It's a very real, it's very earthy. It's very pretty. Yeah. It's not at all fantastical. We don't go anywhere near Oz. There's nothing, there are elements of anything. This to me was about making this character of Auntie M very real, very grounded, very relatable as a woman.
Yeah.
That's a perfect lead into my next question, actually.
Oh, good.
Yay. Emily's story is a twofold for me. One of a new wife in a new world, and one of becoming an instant mom. I understand the story's way more complex than this, but you know what I'm trying to get at here. Why show these sides of Emily?
Well, and again, you know, this really comes from those lines in the Baum book, and and thinking about, okay, first of all, why is she why is Dorothy living with her and Henry? So to me, I established a connection with Dorothy's mom, because we don't know anything categorically about that in the Wizard of Oz books, and there are many books. It's not just the Wonderful Wizard of Oz. Baum wrote, you know, dozens more. But it was about that sense of taking a character and giving them ownership of their own decisions. And one of those things is about where is home, and about taking a decision to move to Kansas to start life with Henry, her husband. So it's about sort of all of the things that come with that decision of, you know, following your heart, following your dream, or, you know, going somewhere with someone you love to start a new life. And what did that look like? And my sort of backstory for Emily is that she is from an Irish family, and that comes from lots of the Kansas prairie farmers were immigrant families, and lots of them were from Irish immigrant families. And it made sense to me, being in Ireland, to tie the stories together there.
Here's what you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, you know, answering the question, I suppose, of why is Dorothy living with Emily and Henry, and what's their family situation like? And and there's no other children in their life as far as the book or the movie tell us. So then I imagined, okay, if they don't maybe have children of their own, what is it like to become a mother, to be responsible for raising a child, and and then what if that's happening at the same time as this absolute climate disaster, disaster of the Dust Bowl,
that just destroyed lives.
And that all of those things were all really driven by those few lines I read you about what had changed her. And you know, it's like becoming a wife, starting a new life, trying to find your way in these terribly hard conditions, being a mother, lots of things going on.
Your brain is so fascinating. I love it so much.
Fascinating or strange?
No. I get it. Like, you see in between the cracks. You're seeing a world. You see a world that nobody else saw, and you're like, let's dig into it. That is a writer's brain, friend. That is how writing works. Yeah. I say it all the time. It's my imaginary friends talking to me. She literally just heard history and it came out.
That's a really nice way to describe it. That there is, it is that sort of the intrigue in what maybe other people don't see, or and I suppose that's the same with anything, you know, we anything that is created, I suppose we all think, oh, that was such a great idea, why, how come that wasn't done before now? And I was convinced somebody must have written Auntie M's story when I first had the idea, and I went searching, and I kind of couldn't believe nobody had done it.
I'm going to tell you mine when we're off pod, because I'm afraid somebody's going to steal my. I can't believe you
don't say it yet.
That's why I'm going to tell you when we're off the air.
You know what's interesting, Hazel? I love that you brought in your own heritage, and I mean, because you're Irish, but. I actually just had a conversation last week at the library where I work, which, by the way, you and Heather have a little cult following because I keep putting your books on display.
Oh, wow. I love that. Love libraries. Thank you so much.
I keep putting them around and being like, I don't read historical fiction, but I loved this. Read it.
And I know you guys do.
And so I was just talking about Kristen Hannah's The Four Winds, which I haven't read, but they were talking about, that's about the Dust Bowl. And how many people in the book club that read it didn't know any history of the Dust Bowl. And I started thinking about this, and it is a deep part of American history, but the way I learned about it was from the novel in verse, that's a middle grade novel in verse called Out of the Dust.
And Karen
Hesse?
I read it.
We don't learn we don't learn about the Dust Bowl in our history classes here. I mean, there's really a lot of things lacking in our history classes.
It's passed over really fast. Like, it's talked about during the Great Depression era, but it's like,
Okay. It's probably more prominent if you live in the Western states that were affected by the Dust Bowl, but Molly and I are not from the Western states.
New Yorker,
but,
sorry.
But it's so interesting to me because this is a whole bit of history that is our history here in the US that we don't know enough about.
Lisa probably knows more than we do.
She probably does at this point because all the research you had to do. But to take Emily from Ireland to a big city to following her husband to go search for the American dream at a time when the economy was terrible. You're hoping for the westward will be better. And then fucking hell, there's no rain. And everything dies.
Yeah.
And literally, and this is one of the things that happens in Out of the Dust, literally they're eating sandwiches that taste like dirt and drinking milk that tastes like dirt because they can't get the dust out of anything.
Yeah. Oh, it was just amazing to... you know, sort of research that. I knew some of it, a little of it. I had also read The Four Winds. But I think, you know, reading things like Out of the Dust, there's an amazing book called The Worst Hard Time by Timothy Egan, really gets into the detail of what it really is like. And I think with anything that you set in a period of history, whenever and wherever that is, I think the key to making it work in a book is to make it feel relatable now.
Yeah.
So it's not the history, really, what it is. It's day-to-day things like you just said, like taking a drink of milk and you can feel the grit of the dirt in that milk. You can't set the table for dinner because the plate will be covered with a film of dust before you put your food on it. You know, so it's just these day-to-day challenges that we can all relate to because we all have to eat, we all have to go to the shops, we all
would
be terrified for a child if they were breathing in dust every day.
Right.
So, I mean, we've got these amazing personal accounts, like, you know, and sort of fictionalized in Out of the Dust, but in other forms as well, and like the Grapes of Wrath, obviously being one of the most. Really amazing to sort of digest all of that as an author and then find a way for it to tell a story through your characters. And it, it felt like the right place in history to set Em's troubles. Again, going back to that line, but a little play as well, because obviously I was trying to balance elements of The Wizard of Oz. And for me, it was about what is my malevolent wicked witch, because I'm not telling that story. There isn't a witch, there isn't anything fantastic.
it's a metaphor
absolutely, and the dust was my metaphor. The dust is the malevolent terrifying force that everyone's afraid of, so it worked in lots of ways, but it's a horrifying piece of history.
A great lead in. You're just queuing me up, babe. You're just queuing me up. I'm just jumping between questions,
too,
by
doing
the way.
This for a while.
I'm too good.
I know. I want to talk about your research, actually, because we're talking about Middle North America during the Dust Bowl and Great Depression. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the Kansas and, like, Central, the Plains. You also did a lot of research for Chicago, too, I really noticed in here. So... I would love to hear about this process for you because it couldn't have been pleasant. These weren't fun times for us in America. So please share. And I think,
you know, it's really interesting because a lot of my historical novels, you know, go to difficult times in history because that's where you've got real human drama, and it's like the best and the worst of times, the best and the worst of people. So events like... my first novel was about the sinking of the Titanic. So, you know, I started
tragedy's just there.
Yeah. But there are these incredible moments in all, you know, I've written about the wars. I've written about children being stuck in a lifeboat in the middle of the Atlantic. Yeah. And of course, it's horrendous. But you also see these amazing pieces of humanity and like courage and people doing way more than they ever thought they could. And exactly the same with the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl.
Yeah.
Being resourceful. So for me, it's always about trying to get to read or hear people who were there at the time. What did they say? How did they respond? What was their experience? And we're so lucky to have, you know, archives and the internet and so much written material.
Librarians.
And I always say to authors, you know, go and dig around in your library because they've got amazing local history.
Yeah. And if you're not local and you're like Hazel and you're writing in Ireland about something that happened in the Midwest, you can just call that library and they'll help you do research.
Yeah, and they will.
And often, you know, sort of an initial wide Google search and you'll find a paper or a document and you can you know, go and access that. And we're really lucky to have that. And I think just any piece of history I can read where I hear from an actual person, you know, newspapers are really, really helpful because you also need a little bit of background at the time, you know, and photographs. I mean, there was incredible documentaries made of the Dust Bowl that were shown to the Dust Bowl farmers at the time to show them how they were destroying the topsoil. And then therefore that's what was creating these clouds of dust. You had photographers going to photograph what was happening to show the politicians. So there's amazing, I mean, it's awful to think that in the middle of this terrifying event and experience, people were being photographed, you know, and somebody comes along. Makes a film of.
I know your life is terrible right now, but stand still.
Some of those photographs, the one in particular that so many of us have seen, which is the mother, and she's got her hand like this, and she's holding a child in black and white.
Yeah,
that was not taken with her permission.
No, well, many weren't,
It was not taken with her permission at all. Yeah. And you know, it's exploiting what was happening to them. But I mean.
Yeah.
They were trying to better the situation.
Yeah. By showing, I suppose, educating the nation really as to what was happening. But so the documentary that was made and shown at the time, you know, and it's incredible to me that I can sit at home here in Ireland and I can access that and see, you know, how was this being reported and what were the photographers who went to the area, what were they photographing? Yeah. And they're fabulous. So you can look at a photograph and to me, I get a lot of information. It's like, okay, there's a little house and what's the make of car and the scale of the dust storm. So yeah, it was really fascinating. And I guess once I've done all that research, then you're kind of trying to find a way.
Yeah.
Well, how does this now fit into this story I'm telling of this
of course.
Young wife and her husband who are trying to make an sort of life for themselves on the prairie. And then bam.
Yeah.
This young child comes and is a destructive force all of her own. So it was really...
I love her. I love Dorothea's little kid, the way that you've written her. I mean, we know Dorothea as a little kid from the original source material, but like, I just, the image of her hanging on to her stuffed lion. And her little red shoes. And I'm like, I'm like literally underlining parts in the book where I'm like, oh, that references it. So I used green pen.
Thank you so much, April. So while before Dorothy was obviously slightly inspired by The Wizard of Oz, I'm assuming, my brain kept going to Little House on the Prairie throughout this. Was this on purpose?
Well, that's really interesting because I very much was leaning into The Wizard of Oz, but I did also love the Little House on the Prairie books when I was a little girl.
It was,
and then maybe just
it was my jam, man. Well, it was my whole personality.
Loved them. Me and my sister used to read those books to each other, and then we had the TV show, and of course, like we just all fell in love with, you know, the way those books would, but we read the books and still have those original. I think they were Puffin or Penguin published books.
So with the Gingham Prince. The Gingham Prince. Yeah.
So all of that world is obviously in me, you know, and I think, you know, the two of, I suppose, quite closely aligned in terms of, you know, Ma and Pa Ingalls and you've got Auntie Em and Uncle Henry trying to sort of establish a home, isn't it? That's what they're both about, really.
Staying alive.
Yeah. Yes. And trying to, you know, find a way that the resourcefulness and the way that you have little moments of joy. You know, I have Emily, a nod back to Ireland and that she plays her father's fiddle. Yes. And interestingly, so does Pa Ingalls, which I hadn't remembered at the time. And just the way women on the prairie, you know, were resourceful making clothes for the children. Mm-hmm. So using the feed and grain sacks to make dresses.
That made the gingham print. I was like, oh my gosh. Gingham.
I know. So again, it was sort of going back to what did people really do? How did they really live at the time? And then sort of connecting the threads back to, oh, okay, well, that works in terms of Dorothy's iconic blue gingham dress.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was
really amazing. Look at you tying all the bows together.
Yeah, I mean, it literally was like threading bits of a puzzle together and the toy lion, you know, it was about, as I said, this book was always and had to be a very real, very earthy. So it's like, how do I create, where does Dorothy get her lion from? And so in my world, her aunt gives her a toy lion, and that's
again, you are just setting me up today. I love it so much. we just mentioned your own sister in this book. There is a deep relationship between Em and her late sister. Mm-hmm. So what was your inspiration for that bond?
Well, as I say, originally, it's sort of like looking at the gap in what we know, and there's no definitive explanation that Dorothy is Emily's sister's child, or Henry's
story.
Or is it a term of endearment? You know, we've all got that woman in our lives that we call an aunt, but it's really just our parents' friend.
Me with her kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, they call her Aunt Molly.
So there was lots of
my boys.
Potential answers. And there's lots of ways actually that women can be mothers and aunts. Mm-hmm. So it was a really interesting thing to explore. And I have a sister. So I think for me, the kind of me thinking about I'm an auntie, I have several aunties through my mom, I have a sister. So that was where I landed with my decision to have that connection between Emily and her sister Annie, which was really, really lovely to write about. Yeah.
Sisters. And the sisters married cousins.
Yeah.
As well.
Because that's
which was common back then. Common back then.
But it was a solution to a problem of why does everybody have the same name? So if Dorothy is Dorothy Gale and Emily and Henry are Gale Farm, and she's not their child, then where has she come from?
I liked it. I thought it was interesting. Actually, my high school boyfriend, his mother had a sister, his father had a brother, and they got married. So their cousins were double first cousins. And I would always be like,
I don't like that.
But it made sense.
I grew up redneck. My mom's parents their siblings all married each other. So my grandparents' siblings all, so out of my Thomas side, there was four of them that got married.
Wow.
Brother, sister. So I double cousins.
Yeah. Everybody. As long as they're not related to each other.
Yeah.
I graduated high school with five of my cousins, so I didn't date a lot.
Well, it was funny because I have so many pages of notebooks where I'm kind of drawing family trees, and I was talking to my editor and going, well, they could be brothers, because me and my sister dated brothers in high school.
Yeah,
it happens.
And then we were like, and then where did the surnames all come from? So it was really interesting actually just to sort of figure out the family tree to everyone.
Now I want you to post the family trees to Instagram. I want to see them.
And you pulled Chicago into this, and Chicago was a great place for this because, in my opinion, because there were so many Irish immigrants there. So I would love to hear your inspiration of not just bringing in your own heritage, but bringing Ireland into this. Ireland, Chicago into this. Oh my God, I'm an idiot.
Well,
Chicago into this.
There's actually a number of reasons. First of all, Chicago is where The Wonderful Wizard of Oz was written. So that was my
Easter egg
nod to the original home of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. And then, so I was thinking about if Emily comes from Irish roots and her parents have emigrated to move to Ireland for better prospects, etc. A lot of Irish settled in Chicago. And then the question of, well, if two young Irish women, you know, are trying to get employment, what sort of roles would they do? It was very domestic service or shop girl.
Yeah.
So that all worked for Emily and Annie and their other sister, Nell, who again, totally fictitious. And it was part as well of thinking about Dorothy's imagination. So Dorothy goes to the Emerald City. She encounters all sorts of mystical, magical things. Mm-hmm. And I was, again, what's the reality? Where's the reality of that? And part of Irish culture, we're very famous for, you know, lots of myths, folklore, stories of fairy folk, the little people. So it made sense to me to have a connection from the myths and stories
it's that beautiful.
Dorothy might have heard as a little girl, that when she then has this imagined other world that she goes
through,
it's all formed from the stories she's been told and the songs that she's heard. So that made sense to me.
It's so clever, Heather.
Thank you, Heather.
Hazel, oh my God. I'm done. I'm never allowed to host a guest ever again. I'm just going to go. Bye, guys. No.
I couldn't help but picture the shop where Emily worked in Chicago as looking like the Wizard of Oz's home in the Emerald City. Like, just not green. But I kept thinking, that's an inspiration there.
It absolutely is.
And there's another
Easter eggy thing there about L. Frank Baum apparently was inspired to create the Emerald City from it was the World Trade, the World Fair that was in Chicago.
The World's Fair in Chicago.
Yeah, World's Fair.
And it was a white city. And that was apparently his inspiration. But he made it because
it was all tents.
Chicago is the white city, in Seattle is the Emerald City, like that's the nickname for Seattle.
Well, and then obviously you've got Ireland is the Emerald Isle, so it may
sense. Yeah. Since you've mentioned it, is there any Easter eggs hidden in this book you really hope fans find? I know there were several. Yeah. And like those, we start early with the lion, and there's a lot I could mention deeper in the book. But is there one specific you hope people notice that you buried really deep?
Well,
or is that a spoiler that you
can't handle?
So I think, I mean, all of the Easter eggs that are in there, if you know, then I hope it will feel like a little gift, a little kind of nod, a little kind of, oh, I know what that is. And the whole, what was really important to me is that if you come to this book, if you come to Before Dorothy without really knowing much about The Wizard of Oz or Wicked, or maybe it didn't have as big a part in your life, that you'll still, everything still makes sense. All of the pieces still hold up.
Yes.
But there are treasures in there for people who want to look for them. Yeah. So I
love it.
They have fun. There is a particular page that I'm very pleased with, more so, well, as much as the Easter eggs, but there's a particular page, I'll just say, that I really hope people will notice.
I love that.
As a fan of Pixar movies and Taylor Swift, I live for Easter eggs. So
even if it makes us look like clowns sometimes.
Now, what's funny is I could have said as a former English teacher, and I didn't.
And you've no idea how much that I, and some of those Easter eggs literally came to me like a gift, and I'd be writing away and I'd literally have, I'd kind of go, What's that? You know, like I mentioned the gingham girl dresses that, you know, reading about how these dresses were made, and it was just, that's the gingham dress.
You're like, I'm so clever. Yay me.
Literally every day. You know?
I mean, your research is evident on the page.
It is.
You can
see it all over the page.
And that is one of the things that I am super critical of when it comes to historical fiction. Stop. If the research isn't there, I'm like, don't waste my time. Do the research.
Right.
And I feel like you did it.
Absolutely.
You did good work.
I'm so pleased, because it is really important to me. I've always really gone there. And, you know, you do have to be careful that the research doesn't take over what's actually in there.
Absolutely.
Know that it shouldn't feel...
Because it will sidetrack your whole writing process.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want somebody to feel like, oh, here's the history bit. You know, it should just feel natural on the page. But it is really it's a really important thing for every historical writer I know. Really, it keeps us awake at night, you know, so it's great to hear.
And we just, interviewed Beth Revis recently, and she writes fantasy and sci-fi. And one of the things we talked to her about is how even those things have to be rooted in historical accuracy. Mm-hmm. There has to be a way that these things happen. And I mean, this is something that I feel like I've learned more from being the best friend of a writer and doing this podcast, is just how much research really goes into every book.
It's exhausting.
It is exhausting because it's the work, you know, that really is the work, right? to be able
That's
to
the
then
work, right?
Set your mind is, free, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm in the middle of writing something sci-fi, but it's sci-fi with reality TV. So I'm doing research on reality television. The depth of it in the books, it's wild. Well, I don't want to take
it. Can be, you know, you can be researching you know, the really gritty years of the Dust Bowl, and you know, the huge duster that came on Black Sunday and what happened. Mm-hmm. Or you can just be researching what was it like to work in a department store in Chicago, and what did people eat for lunch?
We do only have a limited time with you, so as we wrap up, I'd really love to talk to our guests about your upcoming tour here in the States, so they can, I'd love for them to hear about it and what you have going on after that.
Thank you. Well, after that, I'm going to be having a sleep, but...
Yes, babes! You're going to nap. D&D, do not disturb.
I'm embarking on,
team
like...
team nap here at Book Besties.
Totally doing that. So it's my my Eras tour is starting in in New Jersey. I'm literally... The tour schedule is up on my Instagram page. It's probably the easiest place.
Which I'll put a link to it, guys.
So I'm going to be literally going east to west and obviously going to Kansas.
Go west, young one.
Yes, gotta go to Kansas.
So I'm really excited. I'm honestly, I'm having so much fun talking about this book. People have so much to ask. Yes. People have so much to talk about.
And it's one of the books that a lot of people are looking forward to this summer.
It is
in a lot of media right now.
It's
really
huge, anticipated,
which is lovely. And I'm so excited to come to the States and back to some bookstores I've been to before, also visiting lots of stores I haven't been to before. Mm-hmm. So do please come and see me.
Yes, come see.
Very entertaining.
Sadly, not coming to where I am.
I know. I'm sorry.
I'm here.
I feel bad because every time I share my tour, somebody will always say, "Oh, I wish you."
Somebody that you know is like, "Hey, come see me.
Come to Toronto," and I'm like, "I need to go home to my family."
Yeah. How dare you? Yeah.
So that's, I know.
How dare you spend time with your family?
You and Heather should come to Annapolis Book Festival because that's how we met her. And then we can meet you.
Yeah, that would be amazing. That would be amazing.
Sorry, continue.
Yeah, so after
your
that,
tour.
I will be, yeah. So my tour is going to be very exciting. And you see, I love meeting readers. I love talking to people about the craft of writing the book, the inspiration of the book. But it's really lovely then when you meet readers and get their take and what they've picked out. That's why I don't always like to say, you know, what I want people to get out of my books, because everybody gets something different and everybody finds something different. And I just love talking to readers there. And then, when I come home, I'll literally be on the floor in a
potato.
Yeah, that's me for potato. The summer.
We call that sock time in our house, because that's what a sock does. That. You just lay on the floor, right? Yeah.
That's what I'm doing. Socks. Sock time.
Sock time.
Sock time.
Sock time.
I love it.
Well, we appreciate your time, Heather.
Thank you so much.
Thank you
Hazel.
So much for joining us. Oh my God.
Fucking hell.
I'm glad you get a kick out of this, Hazel. I'm glad you find
her,
me funny.
I have to get a new writing partner. The names are too similar.
I'm glad that you realize that I am just a doofus and that I do it on accident and I'm not doing it on purpose.
You know what? This is funny to me because I've spent most of my life being called Helen, which is my sister's name. Mm-hmm. And even before I started writing with Heather, I'd also get called Heather. And now, because my surname is Gaynor, so I'll often get called Gaynor. So I'll get emails and it'll be like, "Hi, Gaynor." I'm like, "That's my surname, but that's okay."
My maiden name is Johnson. I grew up with a girl who was right behind me in school, Holly Jones. So Molly Johnson, Holly Jones.
Oh,
my whole school career, I got called Holly.
Yeah.
Did this girl and I look anything alike? No.
No.
Were we in one of the smallest classes of all time in that county? Yes.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
I get called Rachel. How do you get from April to Rachel?
Wow.
I don't know.
That's a reach. Yeah.
I mean, just pick a different month. I mean,
hey, Autumn. There are
12 of them.
Hey, June.
There are 12 of them.
Yeah.
Well, again, we appreciate your time. We know it's limited and you are on the other side of the world right now. So, well, kind of.
Yeah, Yeah, one way or the other.
Across the pond.
I'm a distant away.
A distance away. So we thank you, Book Besties. We will see you guys same bat time, same bat channel.
What are we doing next week?
Please, I'm sorry.
Hazel, you're amazing. Thank you. Are very excited to host two more authors this month, which is just awesome. Three authors in a row, which is crazy. But next week, we're doing The Betrayal of Thomas True by A.J. West. And he's new to us.
Oh my God.
And so we'll talk to him next week.
Yes. And we were given him by our friend over on TikTok, Dr. Susie Edge. She's
who
the
I'm
best.
A little bit obsessed with and may have just DM'd her again recently. And I hope she gets to come on soon.
So, but we thank you guys for joining us today.
Thank you, Hazel.
Thank you, Hazel.
Thank you.
We were amazing.
See you guys. We'll see you guys next time, besties.
Enjoy.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on Book Besties. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly and not those of anyone else. Today's book was Before Dorothy by our special guest author, Hazel Gaynor. Your book besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins. Editing by Thomas Watkins and music is Sleep Sweetly by Prigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact the Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. You can support the Book Besties by joining our Patreon at Book Besties Podcast. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.